Welcome to the Laurel Mount Island Area of Narcotics Anonymous 5th and Unity Retreat. We would like you to join us in celebrating the recovery and fellowship that we have come to know, need, and deserve in our lives. We encourage you to share in our NA Unity through your experience, strength, and hope in our wide variety of workshops. This is an open retreat. All are welcome to attend. However, we ask that only addicts share in the workshop. And according with our Southern tradition, we are fully self-supporting. Thank you for registering. We should remember that our actions this weekend are a direct reflection on Narcotics Anonymous as a whole. Let's carry the NA message and not the mess. What is the message? Our message is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Our message is hope and the promise of freedom. When all is said and done, our primary purpose can only be to carry the message to the addict that still suffers, because that is all we have to give, that no addict anywhere need die from the horrors of addiction. Page 65. The NA way in Narcotics Anonymous, we are presented with a dilemma. When NA members identify themselves as addicts and alcoholics, cross-addicted, or talk about living clean and sober, the clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests that there are two diseases, that one drug is separate from the rest. Narcotics Anonymous makes no distinction between drugs. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive, allowing us to concentrate on our similarities and not our differences. To the press, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. If any members of the press are present, please come to the registration table where you will be referred to our public information center. We respectfully ask that no pictures be taken during the Unity Retreat by the press. If any NA members are approached by the press, please refer to them the registration table. Remember, no one person represents NA. Please do not attempt to represent NA to the press alone. Thank you. Please observe there's no smoking in all buildings. Hello, my name is Steve, and I'm an addict. I'd like to welcome you to this workshop entitled, What Can I Do? Will you please help me open this with a moment of silence for the addict who still suffers, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Could we please have the reading of We Do Recover from the podium, please?
My name is Walter, and I'm an addict. We do recover. When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Either go on as best we can to the bitter end, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Thanks, Walt. I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Fernand Cindy, from the Pikna area of Narcotics Anonymous.
Okay. Hi, my name is Cindy, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Cindy.
And I just want to say it's an honor to be asked to share up at this retreat for Narcotics Anonymous. Let me get myself out of the way here. I was cranky as hell when they picked me up at 20 after 6. First of all, I got my big toe ripped off at Kennywood on Tuesday, so I'm in a little pain for that. I'm tired. I just came back from a vacation. The boys start school Monday, but you know what? I got in that van. I was cranky. My sponsor said to me, okay, Kathy, which is a sister who I can act like sometimes, took me right out of my space. You know what I mean? And driving up with these two guys, you know, I get in them spaces like that, and I find out, like, I think, because I've heard this around here, coming up on 7 years clean, crazy shit starts happening to you. Now, this program gave me a light today. I didn't know what my topic was until I came up here, and that topic for me is the service. What can I do? And it's coming up here. Even though I don't got a toenail on my nails, got a headache going on, I'm tired as hell, but I won't send out of the program, and I've only learned that from coming in here and having a sponsor and having a home group. So I'm just going to share what it was like for me and how I got to Narcotics Anonymous and what I do today to stay here. I was 3 years from the Pittsburgh area, from Bloomfield, Martinsville, and Garfield. We have a little bit of everything here, and you know, and I grew up five sisters and a brother, and we grew up in an Irish Catholic family, so I had a Catholic background you know, when I got to Narcotics Anonymous, the whole God that I thought of growing up is not the God that I find in this program today. You know, I'm blessed. I mean, it's just truly a miracle that I'm even here today, and I know it's only just for today. But, you know, growing up, you know, I just didn't like who I was as a child. I didn't like being in with that big family. I always liked everybody else's things. I liked your house and your clothes and your mom and your dad and your car. I mean, I liked everything outside of the house. And it's not that there wasn't anything going wrong in my home. I mean, my mom and dad did the best they could. It was me. Also, as a child, I never liked being in there. I always wanted to be outside playing with the gang. They had to come look for me to bring me in. I just liked to play. I wanted to play. That's the type of kid that I was. I went to Catholic grade school, and my first drunk was with my sponsor. We were 11 years old. And we have an awesome story, me and her. We go back as childhood, growing up in the same grade school, getting our first drunk together. There was this woman in my neighborhood. We were 11. She was probably 20, 21. She was sharp. She cheated on her husband, and her famous song was Love the One You With. And I just thought she was the coolest girl in the neighborhood. And she bought us beer, bought me my cigarettes, and my first drunk, I don't remember. I blacked out, I'm sure. All I remember is getting up the next day and those kids being okay and just acting like everything was all right. I played basketball in grade school. I loved that sport. I also, as a child, went to a dancing school down the rec, and my teacher died. And, you know, we talk about lost dreams in this program. For real, you know what I wanted to be when I was a kid? I wanted to be a background singer for a band and a dancer. And I remember when the school teacher died down the rec, I asked my mom and dad to send me to Patio Show. Remember Patio Show dancing school? And they couldn't afford $1 a week. I was crushed. She said, ask your aunt. And I didn't have the nerve to ask my aunt, so that dream just blew out of the way. I did, just like with, you know, normal kids I thought in my neighborhood was doing. We started drinking, you know, like around 7th or 8th grade, just that weekend drinking. The summer of my high school year, I went to Mount Alvernia, which is an all-girl high school. And that year, that was early 70s, was a total blackout for me. Back then, there was like a lot of guys in my neighborhood doing drug stores, and we did a lot of the two-and-alls and the reds and that whole thing that whole year. Total blackout. Walking the streets loaded, nobody ever said nothing to me, so as far as I was concerned, that was okay. There was a lot of drinking in my family. We did a lot of partying. A lot of Irish people celebrate a lot of things for a lot of different reasons. And I can remember as a kid saying, I can't wait till I'm old enough to join them, you know. And when I was old enough to join them is when I got pregnant with my son. I was 17 years old. I ended up leaving that Catholic school and going to an alternative high school in Pittsburgh. What it was like one of the first schools that they started, and it was for kids who couldn't cut it in a regular school. So what they did is they threw us all together, and that was a big party. I mean, it was like we got high before we went to school. Our teachers were from the hippie days, so they were long hair, laid back, got high, and that's about as far as my education went. I ended up getting pregnant at 17 to the first love, first guy I fell in love with. Got pregnant the first time we did it in the hollow, down under the Bloomfield Bridge, and we set up house. So 4 years of that relationship with that guy, I thought that that's how I was going to live for the rest of my life. We were both 17 years old. He quit school. I quit school. He got a job. We got a nice little house. He did the family vacations every year. We did the bowling league. We did everything that I dreamt of being married and being together and what a family was supposed to be. Also, too, with that guy, we sold a lot of weed. So a lot of the money that we had to have the things that we had at a young age came from that. But what had happened there was he ended up leaving me for another woman, and it devastated me. And what I know about myself now is if I don't deal with shit, forget about it. I'll lose it. And I didn't know how to deal with that. It crushed my world. I went on a rampage. I started drinking real heavy, started doing like the beauties in the afternoon, preludes at night. I did shit like stop them. One night I went down and found where his car was, busted the antenna, wrote fuck you, split the tires. That next morning he came up, totally destroyed my place in one hand. And at the time, you know, me and Roberta were hanging together. And she says, you know what, and thank God when you look back on the people in your life, now we're both getting high. I'm a fucking maniac out there. There was an attempt that I made a clear decision to put her off the face of the earth. If he didn't pick her up and throw her in a van, I had every intention of stabbing her and wiping her out. I would have been in a penitentiary, no doubt. But she kind of stepped in and says, you know what, you need to go. And I did need to go at the time. So I moved out west, just like a lot of people did. You know, I wanted to go to California. That was another dream. You know, go hang in California, meet California, and live on the beach. Delusional, you know what I mean? But, you know, to make a long story short, I packed up my son, packed up a duffel bag, hopped on a Greyhound bus, and went out that way. I stayed out there for a year. I lived with an aunt and an uncle who were military people and alcoholics. As long as I drank with them, everything was fine. And I got into some crazy shit out there. You know, I hooked up with a bunch of dudes out there, started running with them, started partying, and things never changed. And what I found out about myself on that is wherever I go, I take me. When I look at all the situations that I thought could change my life and didn't change, the only thing that ever changed my life was this program, and I'm so totally grateful to it. But when I came back from California, I got a little place. I was real good at sitting up high for a minute, you know. And I kind of made a decision, you know what I need? I need a man. Okay, now I'm still drinking. I was one of these people that said I'd never shoot soap, I'll never stick a needle in my arm, all that, blah, blah, blah. But I was a garbage can, would do everything else but that then. So it was a summer day, and I said to Roberta again, I said, you know what I need? I said, I need a man. I need someone to give me that home and that life that I've always wanted. And so I went out to find him. And that summer, Iron City Brewery had a picnic, and I thought, that's where I'm going to find him. He's going to work for the brewery, make big bucks, and he's going to drink and party like me. And you know how we are. I went there. He was there. I was here. I looked at him. I slept with him. He had me out of Penn Hills in a month into a home out into the South Hills. Now, I'm boozing pretty good. You know, snorting the coke. Thinking on manageability. And what happened, that became a very abusive relationship. I ended up getting pregnant to this man. And I ended up putting his baby up for adoption. Now, at the time, my son was like 8 years old. And again, you didn't talk about that in my family. And I had a family that didn't talk about feelings or anything that was going on. And I couldn't deal with it. We went through some counseling together. I had 30 days to make a decision. The man didn't show up. So I knew that that would be the best thing for me to do. And What had happened when I got pregnant, they moved me out to Clareton. They figured away from the family, don't let nobody know, hush, hush, boom, over with, and go on your own way. But I ended up staying out here. I got a good job, making pretty good money, I'm doing real good, just drinking here and there, and I started to get lonely again, and I said, I'm going to go out and find me a man. Well, this one I find at a card game, and he asked if he could call on me. And I thought, man, that's pretty good. But I said to myself, I won't sleep with him. Everybody else I slept with right away. I said, I'm going to give him 30 days. If he can hang for 30 days, he's the man. Well, he hung for 30 days, and I ended up marrying him, and have two beautiful sons to him today. He's still in active addiction, and, I pray for him every day, too, because you know what? He's a good man. He just can't get this, But on that story with that guy, things started pretty good. I mean, he was an iron worker. That's what he did for a living. He took care of my son very well, set up house together, and things were doing pretty good, and I'm still drinking. A lot of alcohol in my story. A lot of alcohol. So to kind of make a long story short, with him, everything was going good. We had gotten a 17-acre farm, and the day that we got the lease for the farm, he fell over 40 feet. They were connecting iron in the air. Call him, everything went over. He got messed up pretty bad. Now at this time, we're doing a little bit of cocaine, drinking. He's on a lot of narcotics for about 2 years. At the time, I became a foster mother. So let me just give you a brief of what was coming in our house. Workman's comp, $1,200 a month. I was getting welfare for Adam and my oldest son. I was getting a child support check for Gray, and I was getting a check for this foster kid. So there was a lot of money coming in. When they took my husband off the painkillers, he went out and started shooting dope. And I'm watching him. I'm watching him going on. I'm watching him coming back, going on, coming back. And, I remember making a clear decision on the couch that night. And I said to myself, if I don't join him, I'm going to lose him. So he came home one day with that bag of dope, and I said, let me try some of that stuff. And he says, oh, babe, you don't want to do any of this. And I said, yes, I do. And, of course, I put up a little fight, not much. And he got it together, and he got me off. And it was like I fell in love with that drug immediately. What that dose did for me in the beginning, I put the boots on. I stopped drinking alcohol right away. In the beginning, it made me feel good. It made me feel energetic. You know what I mean? That whole 9 yards that comes with it from the beginning, but that didn't last too long. He did a lot of the coughing in the beginning. He went out and got it, bring it home, got me off, and, that's kind of how that story went for just a minute. Until I learned how to get myself off and cough, and then the war started. That year, we ended up getting a settlement for $90,000. He said, anything you want, you can have. In between getting this money, we were, running to New York, doing the selling the dope and, blah, blah, blah. Never made no money. Shot that all up. What ended up happening was there was a few things that I wanted when we got this money. And one was I always wanted a wedding. And I always wanted to have a limo and fly to Jamaica and buy a house in a suburb. We got them, we got married, had a nice wedding, had the limousine, flew to Jamaica, thicker than a dog. We're shooting probably 2 bundles a day between me and him. So we figured we'll kick the dope on our honeymoon. So we bought some, some Valiums and God knows what else we got. By the time we got to Atlanta, Georgia, the dope was gone. And by the time we flew into Jamaica, I was obviously, We were on this resort where your alcohol was free 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I know what it feels like for an alcoholic to come back with a DT in shape, because I had it coming back from Nashville. I did some shit on my honeymoon that made me feel like a piece of shit. My husband was a dude that could lay it down for 3 days and get up and feel okay. I quit. I just couldn't. I probably drank about 4 or 5 bottles of rum a day. They had this little bar on the island, and they made me the piano queen for the night. And he had to ask me to go to the bathroom or get a drink a shot of tequila with me. So he told the piano man, keep an eye on her, bring her home. Well, this is where alcohol takes me. I was in a blackout, woke up on a beach with that piano man. Don't know if I did anything. If I did, I don't remember. And he took me back to my husband, knocked on our hotel door, and said, here she is. My husband gave him, like, some money and thank you for taking care of me. Now, mind you, I felt like a piece of shit like this. And the first thing I did was grab the bottle of rum, drowned it, and just blasted until we got back to Pittsburgh. And that's where alcohol takes me. Drugs took me to worse places. See, I never seen a problem with alcohol because I never paid any consequences. But until I got clean and I seen some of the places where I ended up, you know what I mean, and some of the people that I was with, it's only by God's grace I'm standing there. Trust me. Trust me. So when we got back, he bought me the house, fully furnished, 5-car garage, bought a couple Harleys, bought a car. In 8 months, the house was gone, the money was gone, and we sold every piece of furniture in there. Now I have 2 sons to this man. My older son up and left, took off, moved back to Lawrenceville with his dad. Was shooting goats like crazy. I went into my first seed tops up at Jefferson right about when we probably had about $3,000 left in the bank. You know, I figured I'll just go in and get seed tops and maybe we can get this little thing back together. One thing I heard in that detox that set back later was this lady Pat that was up there. She told me, she said, Cindy, every time you come through this store, it's going to get worse. And man, she was telling the truth. Come out of that detox, back off the one and shooting dope again. Now we're living in a car. My husband gets a check once a month for about $1,400, and we usually could stay with somebody 2 days before the check came because we usually took care of them. But in between that, before that check, we were out writing checks. I wasn't a booster. Believe me, I get you busted in a minute, but I'll exchange in a heartbeat. We got some balls thrown into them stores. How dare you tell me I didn't buy this? You know what I mean? And put up a fight so they say, fuck it here, just go. Bringing my kids in to them stores, stealing cartons of cigarettes. You know, my little one, we called him Babyface Cody. He's just saying today, though, he is a baby face, you know. You know, covering up and just putting them kids in all kind of crazy situations. Well, what ended up happening was all those checks he wrote out, they started coming for me after them. Now I'm like 31 years old, never been in a county jail before. I got arrested. For a $58 check, I went downtown and put a $10,000 straight bond on me because they knew they had me. I mean, every magistrate up in Albahalen back down the river wanted me. And let me tell you, that first time in a county jail was an awakening for me. They put me in a cell with a girl who just murdered her husband. I had no cigarettes. First, I'm humiliated to begin with, and I remember asking her, I said, can I please have a cigarette? She said, I'll give you one fucking cigarette. Don't fucking ask me for another one. And I just remember saying to myself, what the fuck happened? How did I get here, you know? Well, I went to a magistrate like every day for the whole month of September on these checks, and that last one I went to was a friend of my husband's family, and he said, Cindy, you need a vacation. I said, that's exactly what I need. And he went, boom, 6 months down the county jail. And that was the first time in a long time that I did not take anything for 6 months. I got healthy, I started feeling good, and I remember the day I was getting on, I said to myself, I just want to dope. That's my problem. You know, I'll just drink and I'll be fine. Well, within 24 hours of getting out of that county jail, I had a spike in my arm again, and I was running like fucking crazy. Couldn't stop shooting dope. I ended up getting arrested again. A month and a half later, I was out of the county jail, and this time my mother-in-law put up bail for me. See, I wasn't out long enough for them to know that I was messing up again. And what I'd done, I had sold to an undercover agent. So I'm back downtown again, got arrested, got back out. That's one case. She gave us an apartment out in Clareton, and this was a stipulation because they knew what we were doing and what we were all about. We had to turn our check over to them. She had to take the rent money out and give us the rest of the checks because she knows she wouldn't have got her rent money. We had a efficiency apartment, me and my husband. They took my oldest son off of us to get him going in school. And it was a shooting gallery. Not too many people crop up on a set. I had no fear of going up on a set. I'd go get your dope, and if you didn't buy me a bag of dope, you were going to get beat that morning. If you wanted to shoot dope in my house, it was a shooting gallery. Bottom line, to get high in my house, you had to get me high. I started running with all kind of different types of people, doing all different types of crime, and got busted again. I got busted for returning a box of condoms with a fraudulent receipt up in Westmoreland County, which made the newspaper, and you know what I mean? So I had a Westmoreland County charge. I had baby face with me, Cody at the time. He's in one police car, I'm in another police car, and I just can't shoot stuff. I can't stop shooting dope. Towards like the end for me, you know how you know, you just think it's just not right, but you just can't stop. And there was one incident, I was up on a hill copping some dope, and you know how they kind of wait you about 3 blocks away from the set, and they jam on you and tear you off and everything. Well, they didn't find the dope that day. But that cop said to me, looking right in the eye, and said, "What kind of fucking mother are you to bring a baby up in the back of a, like a Bronco with no seats in the back?" Now mind you, he's probably about a year and a half old, just kind of floating around in the car seat back here. I got some dude I'm copping for in the front seat, and listen, he made me throw it at safe. I ran home, shot that dope, and went back up and I got another bag. I had a fear in my addiction. I didn't want to overdose. I wanted to die. I would pray to be shot up and in projects. I'd pray to get hit by a car, anything but overdose. I didn't want those boys to have your mother die when they grew up. And I got hooked up with these guys. I always had a bunch of crazy bandits run through my place, and these guys were all banks, and I hooked up with them for about a minute. Now, that summer before that, there was a big drug bust in Clareton, and I sold to another undercover agent, 2 bundles of heroin. I'm in on 1.5 ounces of cocaine conspiracy charge. I'm looking at 5 to 10 out munching. My attorney's telling me, go get yourself some help. It might help you up, blah, blah, blah. I heard it, but I couldn't do it, you know? Well, I ran for these guys with these guys for a minute. We ended up getting busted in Kentucky. The day I was supposed to be sentenced with Novak back there in Pittsburgh. Now, mind you, I should have never walked out of that county jail down there, and I know today that it was fraud. I should have been extradited back here. My kids should have been taken off of me a long time ago, but the guy that I was with, the feds wanted him, and he said, you know what, let the girl go. She's cased up in Pittsburgh. She's got me. So there was one guy in our crew that didn't get busted, and he met me outside the county jail. What do you think we did? Robbed a bank and flew back home. You know, fucking insane shit. I get home, my husband waits with open arms and a bag of dope, and I overdosed that night on one bag of dope, being down there for 7 days. And you know what, I was just sharing with Roberta, I relived that overdose about 2 weeks ago in a dream. It was so vivid to me. I remember when I shot that bag of dope in me, I was dying. I knew it. I couldn't talk. I couldn't say anything. All I said was, God, please don't take me this way. There were 3 guys in that house that night. My husband, the dude I flew home with, he was doing like 10 years in a penitentiary. And the other guy went back and did about 6 months, came out, shot a bag of dope, and never woke up. And those 3 guys saved my life. And I'm here today, you know, so I know this program's a gift. It's a gift. So apparently I had one of the convulsions overdose that saved my life. Still shooting dope, can't stop. I go in front of Judge Novak, and he runs my sentences together, and this was God there, and what he did was he gave me a long-time treatment program. Allegheny County Jail treatment. It's jail, but you know, you do your time in the treatment center. You gave me 30 days to get my shit together, to get the kids together, and to turn myself in. Now, mind you, you think that would make me stop? No. I shot dope up until the day I turned myself into the county jail, but here's what was happening to me. I was praying to God, probably that last 2 months of using, knowing I can't stop, praying to God, do for me what I can't do for myself. Just do something with me. On September 30th of 1994, I shot my last bag of dope with my husband, drank a 6-pack of beer, ate probably about 12 Valium, packed up the garbage bag, and I said to my husband, I don't know where I'm going. I don't know what's going to happen to me, but I ain't coming back. In God's will, October 1st, I'll have 7 years clean, and I never went back. Now, not knowing about Narcotics Anonymous, I heard a little bit in the detoxes, but never, ever in a million years that I thought, just never in a million years I thought where I'd be today. A year prior to me going into that program, my son had said to me, Mom, look up Roberta. And I said, I can't let her see me like this. Now, meanwhile, when we parted in our addiction, I was boozing, she was into shooting the dope, and we just kind of parted our own ways, you know what I mean? We got a tattoo together, our first tattoo together, so we would never forget each other. And I never forgot her, never forgot her. She did for me, as a kid and in my addiction, of what she does for me today. You know what I mean? You got that bond there. It's just a bond that'll never, and I've always, always, always thought of her. But I couldn't let her see me. I didn't know that she had 6 years clean in the program. I didn't know what her life was all about. So anyway, that's where the process started for me. That last run of kicking that dope almost killed me. You know, I never did the methadone program, but when I hear people share about getting off that meth, I can identify. I was sick for almost 2 months. Withdrawals were horrible. I probably got my first sleep maybe about 21 days into the facility. I thought I was going out of my freaking mind. But all I knew is I didn't want to go back living the way I was living. And when you're in there for a while, they let you go to outside meetings. You know, I had heard Roberta was in the rooms, and it was, I know dates are pretty good for me, but it was New Year's Eve of 94. I walked into the Teamster Temple meeting. There's Roberta sitting on the side of the wall, and there's Walter, Rudy, and this guy, Sammy. And you know how when we end our circles, we say, you know, pray for that suffering addict, pray for that person you want to see come in here. Now, this is a big-ass meeting. It's on a Saturday morning, 11:30. You guys get a chance. Come on down, because that was my first home group, and that's where it started for me. I walked in this meeting. She stands up and says, this is her, this is who we've been praying for. And these guys stood up and they hugged me and they said, welcome home, your seat's been waiting for you, you know, that good cliche shit. And I knew right then and there that I was home. I knew nothing else, but I knew I was home. And I asked her to be my sponsor that day, and she said it would be an honor. You know, and remember that day, Roberta? And the next words out of my mouth was, what do I do? And the next words out of her mouth was, do you pray? And I said, yeah, I pray, you know. And she says, well, how do you pray? And I said, well, no, I lay there and I talk to him. Now, the God I grew up with, you know, that Catholic God, that punishing God, is what I grew up with. And I just thought I was doom and gloom. I thought me and my husband were going to be grandpaps to serve one of the rockers here, and I'm going to have to get grandpa off to get him motivated to play with the grandkids. That's how I really thought my life was going to be. And she suggested to get down on my knees and say a third-step prayer, which she found in the county jail, and what she started doing, and it changed her life around. And at the time, I mean, I was gun-ho and going, if you'd have told me to stand on my head to give me a day clean, I'd have done it. So I started doing that. She said, chase them meetings like you chase that dope. And she said, thank God at night for another day clean. I had 3 months clean when I started that process, and my life started changing. She said, pick up them cups and ashtrays. What can I do? That's right, what that topic's all about. She said, there's miracles under them ashtrays. I clean. To this day, if there's a meeting with ashtrays, I pick up them cups and ashtrays. She said, you got to get a home group. So that home group that I met these guys in, I made up my home group that day. Walter welcomed me. And thank God for home group members. I mean, I must have asked Walter for a year tons of questions because I didn't know what to do. And they just like kind of shook their head and guided me along. But that was the first time in my life between my sponsor and my home group, and I think the home group is very, very important in this program, is where I started feeling acceptance, where I started feeling that somebody loved me, where I started feeling that somebody cared about me. And then they showed me what to do. You know, they made me a secretary at 9 months clean. I just thought I was a big shit, you know. And that was when I learned that little bit of service there. And, you know, it's just been great. I formally worked the steps with my sponsor. My first 3 steps I worked in my first year. and I went over them steps with her, and it was real, I mean, very clear to me that I was an addict. It was very clear to me that my life was unmanageable. It was very clear to me that the shit I was doing was insane. And it was very clear to me the night I got on my knees and asked God to give me another day clean that, you know, it was going to be okay. I just knew it was going to be okay. I stayed in that facility for like 8 months. I didn't have my kids. Went to a lot of meetings in there, and coming out of there and going on my own was scary. But like I was hearing the guy sharing tonight, which is so true, even if no matter how many years you got clean or if you're just coming around here, that 90 and 90 did it for me. I heard it but didn't hear it. When I got out of that facility, this dude come up to me, and it just doesn't make sense. Something's just not. In 90 days, he said, hey, you don't like it, it's right there for you, you can go back. And for some reason, I heard that message. I heard that. And I did that. I probably went to 180 meetings in 90 days when I got out of that facility. Because I didn't know how to live. I did not know how to live without a drug or a chemical. I did not know how to live. I got my kids back in about a month when I was out. A lot of my problem, I thought, was my neighborhood. And it wasn't my neighborhood, it was me. And I got a house back in my neighborhood where I grew up. And I started in that house. Remember I said I had one garbage bag of clothes? I went in with two garbage bags of clothes. And you know what? I was happy as a lark because slowly by surely, you know what I mean? The fellowship of my friends and people just said, don't worry, you're never alone. And I started building up my house. And, you know, I'm a single mom today. I'm raising these two boys. Our program's in our house. We have a group contest when shit gets out of hand. We put it on the table. Now, I'll let them get angry and they cuss sometimes. So that's how they feel. And they know the same with me. You know what I mean? When they hurt me or do some shit with me, I'm hurt. And I'm going to walk away so I don't get angry at you. But they know that I'm hurt. But when I come back down on set, they're ready to talk about it. You know what? Next break in the cycle. I didn't have that in my house. You all taught me that. The program taught me that. The program taught me that. And my one boy's 16, the other one's going to be 11. And so far, just for today, you know, they're good kids. You know, they got a little bit of a guideline. They got a mom who's clean today. I wanted to really stay home with them guys this weekend. We just come back from our vacation, a beautiful vacation for a week. I'm a little burnt out. Full start Monday. I was looking for every excuse not to come up. You know what they said to me? Go, you need it. You need to be, you know, with Roberta. You need to be, you know, by yourself for the weekend. So, they know what I need. They know what I need. When I don't get to a meeting for 3 or 4 days and I get a little on a cranky side, them boys say, Ma, go to a meeting. You know, they always remind me, Friday, it's your home group tonight, you know, because they know. They know if I don't go to meetings, I pick up, I'm not going to be there for them. I'm not going to be there for them. What the step did for me was, I learned who I was. It taught me who I am, what I am, and what I want today. And it's been good. I just bought a house this year by myself without a man. I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with you guys because I believe God has someone there for me. You know what I mean? And I learned that. That keeps me from jumping in. We can jump into some shit. I want to every day sometimes. But I know once I get in it, it's not what I was. It's what he wants. I got to believe that. I got to believe that. Because I know what I want. And I was never right. It doesn't work out. I did it. You know, I did it. I hooked up with a guy that, you know, 6 months clean he used, and I almost used with him. There was a bag of dope in my bathroom. I had about 18 months clean. And my head went right to it. See if he loves you. Tell him you want half of that bag of dope. But he says, no, he loves you. But if he says, yeah, he don't care about you. You know how we have people in the meetings that annoy you? You know how we say around here, you just don't know who's going to say you like that day? This dude annoyed me because every time I come in a meeting and I was new, he'd say, how'd you do it? And I didn't know how to answer him, so I would avoid him. I'm brand new, right? And what he wanted you to say was, don't take the first one. That's all he wanted you to answer him. Now I'm on a canoe with my pants down, there's a bag of dope here, my head's talking to me. As loud as day in my bathroom, that man's voice was like right there. He said, Cindy, don't take the first one. If you don't take the first one, you'll get another day clean. I pulled my pants up, gave the dude the bag of dope, told him to get the fuck out of here, ran to a meeting and thanked that guy. Thanked that guy. The guy who annoyed me saved my life. I'm involved in service. When I had a year clean, my sponsor does H&I. She got me involved in H&I. I always wanted to, I said, if I could get anything back when I had a year clean, I said, I'd like to take the meter back into the facility that I got clean in. And I was able to do that. I chaired there for a year, and I sponsored that facility for 2 years. I've always stayed involved in service. My home group's very, very, I miss my home group. I haven't been there, it's tonight. And I haven't been here for 3 weeks. Not that I don't want to. I was on vacation, and I'm up here this week, but I've seen a home group member come in. I miss them. I was down Walter tonight. I miss my home group. That's a cool, I don't want to go to a home group, you know. But that's my home. That's where I feel comfortable. That's where, you know, I mean, they'll love me no matter what I'm going through. Sometimes I can be a bitch, but I don't stay there long. I don't. I truly don't. I don't. I can be there for a minute just like tonight. I was a bitch getting in the truck. I'm looking for, man, I got a feeling fucking property. They got these blah, 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 blah. And you know what? And in the heartbeat, man, it was gone. They started talking, started sharing, and I just thank God that I'm here with these guys today, you know. So if you're new, you know what I mean? Get a home group that you feel comfortable with. Get a sponsor that works set, that works the program. I want what my sponsor has. My sponsor works the program. She incorporates the steps in her life. That's what I want. That's what gives me the freedom today. Help the newcomer out. I'm not rolled in with the DSR and all that kind of service work, but for me, service is being there for that newcomer coming through that door, giving my telephone number out, showing up my home group every Friday night, and when asked to share, and this is not one of my favorite things to do, trust me, I'd rather help you get to a meeting and, you know, share the podium or share one-on-one, but I was taught early not to say no to Narcotics Anonymous, and I don't. So I want to thank you guys for having me up here, and thanks.
Thank you, Cindy. I'd like to introduce our second speaker, who's John from the Capital Era of Narcotics Anonymous.
My name is John. I'm a recovering addict. And, first of all, I want to give honor to God for carrying me and my friend Casey down the hallway to get here and, and getting lost and making it here on time. It was like 10:20 and we've totally been at 10:45. God seemed to think that we made it safely a couple of days out of it at all, but God was protecting us. And the beautiful thing about it is I closed the door on God when I got in my car. And I was doing the fleshly thing, which is the routine getting here. I never prayed and asked him to get it here safely. I just was like, stop doing these things. But he carried this thing out. You know, and it's like what Cindy was saying brought me to that point, like, dang, you know, even when I'm killing myself or into my own self-seeking pleasures, God protects me. You know, and I heard you saying that, and I thank him for that. I also want to thank you, Gary, for remembering me and inviting me and also taking a risk for me sharing. It is truly an honor to just be standing up here, you know, clean and nervous and all those good things that come with being John. Wow. What can I do? I actually didn't want to come here. I'm going through a storm. I don't want to take any more suggestions from fellowships because I've tried so many of them and it just don't fit for me. You know, I'm looking to be me. You know, the old behaviors and old thinking is just there. I know I needed to be here. And I don't know. Let me just tell you what's going on with me so this way I can see myself. I'm back in a relationship with a wife of mine that I've been with since maybe 14, and it's going on 18 years. And throughout the 18 years, I could say maybe 10 of it was unhealthy, crazy, active addiction, significant other, loving one another. Crazy. With 4 children involved. And the in and out, affecting them, affecting me, affecting her. And my last run, before I was introduced to recovery, was breaking a knife off in the guy's set for messing with my wife. You know, I didn't know I was that successful. I just knew that I loved her. She was mine. You know, she was like a possession, but she couldn't get me to believe that. And I blamed her for me putting this knife in me. Of course, I was going to run through some other histories and stuff. But bottom line is, once I was in the prison system, I went crazier, you know, because I was confined, rebellious, I was angry, I felt betrayed because they came to court against me, you know. He was wrong for messing with my wife. I loved her. She couldn't have cheated, but I could cheat because I cheated all the time. Never had, you know, straight on a relationship with her. And that was crazy because I could be wrong, but she couldn't. I don't know. I used in jail. I went through the hole several times. I did whatever I could do to belong to the coolest guys in the jail. And I did all that to hide under the fear. And what I got in touch with, that fear that I was hiding under, was the fear that I grew up with as a child. You know, see, like, doing some step work, I found out that it wasn't just using drugs that made me sick and didn't know how to properly use my senses. It was some film. Some wants, some desires, a lot of lack of love. And like my mom, she loved me the best way she knew how, just to me, wasn't sufficient enough. You know, and you got me sneakers on Easter, and I was sitting in the house, you know, while the kids weren't playing. You know, and growing up and getting to be a teenager, I said, I'll fix that, I'll get my own. You know, and it went on, and it opened the door to more tragedy. And like, in the prison system, for that whole year I ran around, mind you, I was facing 15 to 30 for that breaking a knife off. And I ran around, blah, blah. And I don't know, one night, I think, before the last time before I stayed in the hole, something was like talking to me. You know, and I was scared because I thought I was losing my mind. You know, and I telling nobody this, and they'll put me in a psych ward and something, you know, parasol thing me up. But after that night, I went back to the hole again for somebody else because I wanted to be cool still, you know. But bottom line is, I was getting a spiritual awakening, you know. And what it did for me, May 13th of 93, it allowed me to start a process of just recovery inside the institution. And it was scary as hell because, once again, I was challenged with not being like the rest of the cool guys. And I don't know, fear always prevented me or motivated me not to be me, if you follow me. But taking that step out there and going to the program meetings and so forth and hiding in myself to complete my treatment plans and everything, eventually what happened, I started creating new habits, and I started doing things differently. And what it rewarded me with was an opportunity to, I don't know how, but I only did 3 to 6, and I did 3 years, and I got out. Didn't have to be none but an outpatient. Completed the outpatient, and next thing you know, my probation officer was calling me to his office and telling me that I have 1 more year of parole to walk off. And the dope fiend in me is like, you know, he screwed up, you know. Oh. But it was okay because he knew. And in the process of that, when I got that information, I hooked up with some guys and ran a check scheme. You know, and it was a yours department, and I was the guy to do the check and everything, and he got a nice lump sum of material and had a good buy and everything. Some big cash at that time. They got busted. And I was scared like shit. I just knew that I was going back, they was gonna tell, so I was like running and so forth, and they finally caught up with me, and I denied everything. To this day, I was like, no, it wasn't me. No, he lying, and I'm not taking no plea, I didn't do it. And like, once again, my God came to save me. They're doing time now. To this day, I know I'm as guilty as them. but I stand here in front of you. You know, and this is still why I'm clean, out of jail, but the behaviors are still there. I got out of that. And that fear, once again, it deterred me from wanting to hang around with God just for a minute. But I returned back to the insanity of wanting that, this love. You know, so I went back to the wife. And I also tried to stay in my children's life throughout all my craziness. I still tried to, you know. And when I returned back to her, and not really having a whole lot of ground or a strong foundation to stand on, I was trying to control her again. I was trying to have her be who I wanted her to be. And a lot of my areas were still getting to know John. So it was crazy once again. I was cheating again, and she was not being the woman I thought she was supposed to be. And I mean, it was like a vicious cycle. And the reason why I wanted to touch on that, because when I was introduced to What Can I Do, from the gentleman that became my sponsor that took me to a meeting that saved me from going back to prison, when I actually went and got a weapon, I said, I'm going to fix this, I'm going to kill every last one of these motherfuckers in this house, and this way I don't have to worry about you sleeping with my wife, I don't have to worry about paying for my children, and they ain't going to catch me. He took me to a meeting, and it was in Altoona, it was Monday night meeting. I didn't know why I'm sitting here with all these people, because Monday night meeting in Altoona is packed, and I'm like feeling like an alien. Don't want to be here. You know, I want to kill, but this guy's big, he's a basketball coach, and I'm small, and I'm telling you, a lot of days drugs gave me more courage than I could imagine. More, and like, only through this program I'm able to tell you the honesty about that. Because for years, I couldn't give you that. I'll be too vulnerable. You'll know my weakness. But this guy is big, and I'm like, and I heard people talking, and then like on near the closing of the meeting, I heard another guy talking. He said some things that exactly where I was at. I mean, like he wanted to kill his wife. He caught her in the bed, and he went to prison, and here he go back again. And I'm like, who told him my shit? You know, but it wasn't me. But he was talking for me. And that was the first time that I could actually say that I related to these members in my positive life. And through that process, I've been going on in recovery ever since. You know, 8 years, all kinds of hell, trying to not be bothered by the fellowship. Some days I don't want to do them, I'm done, I'm quitting. But through the grace of God, you know, I've been dealing and going through the storms, trying to turn the corners every now and then, but I've been holding on and I haven't picked up a chemical. And no matter how long I lay down myself, I've been blessed to be able to pick them back up and do them and practice them. I talked about the storm with being with my wife. And I'm telling you, I'm angry because I've returned back to this relationship under the impression that I could love her and be in the household with my children and love them. And we could be a family. See, no matter what I ever desired in life, I desired a family, a whole complete family. And it's not happening. She's doing everything right. She's in this fellowship. It has blessed her. She showed me that this fellowship works. I don't want it. I don't want it. And it's not about picking stones if a piece of paper is on the floor or she might work too much or whatever. I'm at a point in my feelings and in my thinking that, like, we talk about it in the third edition, saying the flame of desire for our newcomers and members here. Well, I try to improvise that in my relationship. And I don't have, my candle is out. And hers is burning like 50 times any of it that I've ever known, and I don't want it. And I keep questioning myself and searching myself, and I'm like, okay, is it because I can't fix her no more? Is it because that she's not acting crazy? I'm actually like talking to support members, you know, if I feel like I want to go outside the relationship because I see good-looking women. I always see a woman that looks better than the one I got. That's real. I always see. Because my disease is right with me. He ain't going nowhere. So I share that with them. I tell them the truth, and it helps you go through that day. So if I can make it through that day, I'm successful. And that's all that matters, just for that day or that moment. Like I said, I've tried several solutions for at least the last 2 years of dealing with this one. And once again, I'm in touch with the fear. I'm afraid to be alone. And this topic talks about loneliness being a really main character towards taking me back. I don't want to substitute, because I made the decision to leave her. I don't want to substitute with another woman. I mean, truly, I don't want to. But the acting part of me will. But the ingredients and the spiritual part of me don't want to. I've harmed her. She's upset. She doesn't know I'm here. All she knows that I went out the door, I went back to work, and I'll be back. So basically what I'm getting in touch with is that not only am I feeling it, I'm watching and seeing myself reacting these old behaviors. So I want to sabotage it and make sure she does the work that I can't do. Because right now we're still staying in the same household. And then a part of me is like wondering, am I destroying the blessings that I was given? You know, because my sick thinking will tell me that I can get something else and go through way worse than what I'm going through now. And I'm not really going through anything wrong. So what I'm getting in touch with is like, once again, this old feeling in me is kicking up, and I'm like really trying to find out why. You know, I don't want to tell people so they can ridicule me. You know, I'm down in Hattiesburg. To me, it seems like it's a different atmosphere of recovery from what I got here in Altoona. And recovery is recovery as long as you stay willing and open, following those principles. But I'm telling you, I'm scared. I'm scared like shit. You know, and I love my time. It is of value, but it doesn't exclude me from reality. It doesn't. You know, so I'm like, what do I tell them about this topic? What can I do? When I'm scared of shit, I'm going through all this, and I'm probably self-conflicting a lot of it. I know not to use. I know not to use. And I talked about loneliness. When I did find the courage and just make a decision to come here, I started to come by myself. And I remember when I first got this information, it was like 20 people. Come on, I'm going to support you. And guess what? I ducked them, dodged them, purposely stayed away from them, and I got caught up with one. Because I wasn't supposed to, you know, say hi and get my card go. But circumstances were allowed to happen. And I'm just saying, like, I have to keep it real to the things that I do in a day to try to, like, not go back to getting high. It's always about the drugs for me. Because if I don't get high, my behavior is going to kill me or put me back into one of them institutions. So I don't play tricks. I don't want to think that it's not. I know Narcotics Anonymous doesn't offer me anything but the opportunity to not pick up. All the rest of that stuff that I get, is I call it gravy, but they're blessings, and I'm grateful for it. Because Cindy said, the truth allowed me to find myself. But I'm at a point where it seems like I don't know. You know, I'm on a sixth step, which I call it the conduct step. You know, and I remember the very first time I did that first step, that sixth step, and I was like, damn, where are these defects come from? My sponsor was like, what are you talking about? I was like, man, I'm arrogant, I'm obnoxious, I'm slimy, I'm sneaky. I was like, where did they come from? And he was like, oh, they always been there. But you doing some work, you can see them, you become aware. You know, and like, I struggled. I felt stagnated at a point. I felt less than. You know, I felt beaten down on myself. You know, and like, I found out that it's okay because I'm not by myself. You know, there's a lot of people who are in the same process I am. The blessing that I have is the awareness. Now, what do I do about it? Now, how do I revert these defects I can portray? You know, how do I actually learn how to be a gentleman? You know, and like, not feed off that information that helped me become a sick individual, an addict before I picked up the drug. You know, I'm going around in circles, but this is like how I see myself. It's like, here's a a variety of areas in my life that's been damaged and stolen from me, and like I don't know how to get them back. And the pieces that I'm getting back, they're so new, it's like they don't feel like they belong to me. You know what I'm saying? I'm like getting some identity of myself, and it's like, this supposed to be me? I'm supposed to be able to tell the woman that I'm married for, I've been with her for 18 years, and I'm telling her I don't feel this love, I don't want to be with her, I'm watching her snap, and like, it's okay. Being around here, they say, that's what we can do, but we say to be cautious, because like the 9 steps gives us ingredients on how like not to harm people and so forth, even yourself, but like, I skip over 3rd step, I'm not praying. I'm looking for solutions out of my own, in my own reality. You know, like, it's painful, y'all. It really is. I wanted to come up here and just give you philosophy and just literature. But I know that that's not the case, because your experience, strength, and hope is how we keep the day clean. And all I know is that I must not use, by any means necessary, I cannot pick up the drug, no matter what. And I know that this will pass. I don't know if I'll be with her or without her or what, but as long as I don't use, as long as I don't react, it will pass, and I will be able to go through it. Just dealing with it. But I guess I'm still left with what can I do? You know, so I go to a meeting, which is this one. And I normally go to the Friday one in Harrisburg. I've been substituting, working extra hours on purpose. Coming in the house like 1, 2, 3. Last night I came in 4:22. That's what I was doing. Driving around. I went downtown Harrisburg, parked the car, walked around Harrisburg, and saw a crowd of people walking in this place called Society. I know it's close. I ain't drinking. I'm going. Now they want a $5 card on door coverage. It's a bunch of people standing at the door, and they gotta pay. It comes to me, God says, go right in. You don't want my money. So I'm in the club, and I'm looking around. I feel the lust kicking up. I feel the alienation because I'm not a clubber. I haven't been in clubs. But like, it took me to today to review that behavior. So I'm like actually in a rehab without you. I mean, to be honest, I don't know, man. I know that, like, all the time is not always this difficult or this confusing for me. And like, there's a lot of sunny days in my life. You know, and I guess just like right now at this moment, God is like making me tell the truth and let you know that there's some pain. I just want to be happy. You know? And then like, these principles keep popping up and it's like, man, what the fuck wrong with you? You ain't get high. It ain't enough. I want more. So I'm saying that. Because for years, all I did was stuff myself stuff. I mean, I'm actually finding out that I actually was self-obsession. Obsession. And I was like, this is dick, man. Go back to the 4 step. Do some work. Talk to the sponsor. I'm like, you mean to tell me that I've been trying to fix my life on my own all the time? In every aspect? Because the mom was too busy, so I started out 14, 17, started my own kids. 28, married, running around, being responsible, sleeping, paying bills, buying cars, all this stuff. I mean, leave one city and do the same thing all over again. Don't want your help. I'll do it. Even to the point of renting from somebody, the toll is broken, knowing that I need to call somebody to come fix it. I'll fix it. Don't know how, but I will. That's evident. But then if I stay in this city as the now that I'm talking about. No, man, it's like I'm laughing at myself. I'm like, damn, do you hear you talking the solution? Do you hear you describing the message you make? Because I've been taught to, like, listen to myself. You know, and I'm like, damn.
I'm in denial. You know, because like we was listening to this guy and he was talking about to me and I was like, that's that I call it mocking people. When you know, you telling somebody else to I don't got no damn committee, ain't no, you know, when denial comes, dishonesty comes. But it's true. All of them do follow each other. You know, all I know is that, like, because I have 8 years doesn't exclude me. I was given a suggestion, show up in some meetings. Get back in service. I used to do 8 to 9. I used to love to go back to what gave me this opportunity, prison service, because I can relate. I got away from it. I justified and said, I grew up. I'm at another level. You know? And then I beat down on myself in another area, right? Because I had 2 sponsees and they both used, right? But they never called me. But let me tell it, I'm the sponsor, so it was my fault. You know, so I'm like, damn, wait a minute, you know better. You can't blame yourself for somebody else. But my disease needs me to grab this stuff to beat me up so I can use. And being aware that it's hard to remove it when I know that, like, this heart is yearning for something. That's why I got high. I wanted him to validate me when we were growing up. I needed for him to say I'm cool. I needed to belong to. I couldn't walk around being proper. I had a situation happen the day before yesterday with another friend of ours that's in this process. And he was going through some street stuff, and he stated to me the after effect of it. He said, I'm the reason why I ain't calling you, because you done sent me some spiritual shit. Like you did before, because we had a situation before. You wanted to shoot somebody, you wanted me to get a gun. I told him, no, man, think about the principle, just matter. You really want me to step out of myself there, you know, come on. And he didn't do it. But this time when it went on, he told me this stuff. He said, he ain't calling me because I'm too spiritual. I was hurt. I'm hurt. What you mean you ain't calling me because I'm too spiritual? Disease stuff. And open mind here, right? You supposed to call me. I need some help. I need some trouble. So basically, like, if you're hearing everything I'm saying, it's like I'm opening the world of all that old behavior and doom. You know, I heard somebody say something about being refunded. I'm walking right in that direction. You know, it is something how one situation can open up so many others. And like, I beat myself up. And I'm going right back through this stuff. I said, I got to fix. And I know I can't. But for some reason, I just think I can. I really do.
They didn't say I would be well.
I know it's real important to give myself an opportunity, just like the newcomer, and like hopefully they too know that because we surrender to the disease of addiction doesn't mean that we have to stop fighting. You know, now I'm dealing with another aspect of fighting. Another area that I'm angry with is our world. You know, in the place that I work, I deal with people who are biased and crazy. They'll smile on my face and behind my back. I'm a nigga. They hate me. I think I'm all that. And I'll tell you straight up honestly, if I don't like you because of something that you do that reminds me of me. Whether you got a program or not. Of course, I'll justify and say, you just think you better and, you know, fuck you. So my biases don't matter. You know, something. But what I'm looking at, how I'm allowing it to affect me, because I like being nice. I really do. I like smiling. Like, I see my boy Phil, I couldn't even remember the name, just a face, and I'm like hugging him like, damn. You finished college? How the hell all these years I've been going, I remember that he was in college? How? Because it was real stuff. You know, so I like being that way. You know, even for the fact of getting lost, I stopped the vehicle and asked the gentleman, and like, my mind said, they got one since you jumped out. So here comes some more of the OVA, because the information I grew up with, black and white don't mix.
I'm out of South Philly, the hood of South Philly. In the ghetto, you don't come down there. You got to be cool, because it was a couple, you know, but you got to be in, you know. And, like, over the years that grew, it's like trying to remove this stuff, and it shows up on its own. I'm talking about, like, being honest with you, how shit just comes back. I'm supposed to have been done with all this shit. I don't like standing up here sounding crazy, confused, and hurt. I don't like that. This ain't what I'm supposed to be for pound. Guys, the girl, they like, yeah, yeah, yeah. What can I do with the bus? I just heard that speaker. That's what I want. That's my will. I'm telling you the truth. You know, but I guess this is the way it's supposed to be. You know what I mean? Getting freedom without even seeing it. Oh, man, I just know that I hope I don't turn into those people, you know, and I really just keep on striving, like, staying around here so somebody else can get what I got, even if it's just a hug to them, you know. It's just really important to keep this fellowship alive, because also I'm aware, like, how we got new waves of recovery and addicts coming in. Y'all get over this, some new age stuff. It's like, don't read literature, don't talk.